Le comité souhaite également recevoir des informations officielles et détaillées sur les faits justifiant chacune des accusations portées contre M. Ndondangoy, sur la procédure suivie par le Parlement.
So his parliamentary immunity has been lifted, and there are allegations of torture and threats in Uganda. Another situation examined by the committee concerns five parliamentarians in Uganda. They were arrested during a by-election in the municipality of Arua in August 2018. According to the information available to the committee, these parliamentarians have suffered torture in detention and they have been accused, among other charges, of treason, a crime that can be punishable by death in Uganda. These judicial proceedings have raised concerns about respect for human rights. So thanks to collaboration and personal involvement of the President of the Parliament, a delegation went to Uganda in January 2020 to gather information firsthand. The committee would like to thank the Ugandan authorities for their cooperation during this meeting. Nonetheless, unfortunately, the Ugandan delegation decided not to meet the committee virtually during the last session. Given the problems posed by this case, directly affecting the institution of Parliament, the committee considers that the Ugandan Parliament should certainly use its powers as far as possible to continue to move towards a satisfactory solution for these cases. This would certainly help to strengthen the Parliament as an institution. The committee remains at the disposal of the parliamentary authorities to maintain a constructive dialogue and to work together to protect the rights of our colleagues. Tanzania, we'd like to present to you for the first time the case of Mr. Tundu Lissu, an opposition figure in parliament who has a long career. He has consistently been threatened by the Tanzanian government, which he openly criticizes. 7th September 2016, Mr. Lissu survived an assassination attempt carried out by attackers armed with AK-47 rifles. He was hit 16 times, but he did not die from his injuries. He has been in exile for 3 years. Now Mr. Lissu has finally returned to Tanzania. That was in July of this year for the presidential elections that have just been completed. Since his return, Mr. Lissu, it appears, has once more been threatened and intimidated. Therefore, we ask the Tanzanian authorities to carry out appropriate and effective investigations into this attempted assassination and the more recent threats, the death threats, and other forms of intimidation that have gone unpunished as yet. Zimbabwe. The committee also examined the case of Ms. Mamombe, one of the youngest MPs in the Zimbabwean Parliament. On the 13th of May of this year, Ms. Joanna Mamombe and two young colleagues of hers, it appears, were kidnapped, tortured, and subjected to sexual abuse during 24 hours of arbitrary detention. The committee is shocked to learn that after making such severe allegations, Ms. Mamombe was in fact arrested by law enforcement agencies and accused of having invented her own kidnapping. So the committee has declared this an admissible complaint during the May session. The committee is extremely concerned by this case and calls on the authorities of Zimbabwe to do everything possible to protect the rights of Ms. Joanna Mamombe and to carry out an independent inquiry is also effective to identify those responsible for these violations of rights and to bring them to justice. Latin America. We will start with Brazil. The committee was also struck by the case of the Brazilian MP, Mr. David Miranda, who has been a deputy taking the place of John Willis until his departure in exile in 2019 after various death threats and a campaign of harassment. Since he became an MP, Mr. Miranda is said to have suffered the same violations of rights for the same reason, his sexual orientation and his political activities in favor of the rights of various minorities, including the LGBTI community. The person bringing the complaint indicates that the life of this MP is in danger, referring to the death of Ms. Mirelle Franco, a colleague of his who was killed. This crime has not gone unpunished until today. The committee has declared this an admissible case and calls on the Brazilian authorities to identify those responsible and to end the impunity that is prevailing and to provide information on measures to protect and guarantee the security of Mr. Miranda. Venezuela. The individual cases of 134 parliamentarians, members of the opposition in Venezuela, have been examined by the committee. The situation of these parliamentarians in the opposition in this country is extremely concerning. It has brought called up the attention of the committee and the council for various years. The committee firmly denounces the gross repression of Venezuelan parliamentarians on the basis of their political opinions. There have been serious actions, and they have been continuous. These include torture, harassment, threats, stigmatization. These acts have been carried out by agents of the state, paramilitary groups, and violent groups made up of government supporters. All of this has gone unpunished. The committee also denounces the many measures taken by the executive power and through the authority of the judicial branch during the current legislature that have been attacking the integrity and independence of the National Assembly. It finds that this situation is a clear attempt to place obstacles in the way of effective exercise of the will of the people as expressed during the vote of December 2015. As the next elections approach in Venezuela, on 6th of December, the committee calls on the Venezuelan authorities to refrain from any actions that would violate the rights of the current members of the National Assembly. The committee is concerned by the restrictions currently in force and the institutional framework governing the upcoming elections. These are threatening fair conditions for the elections, and the members of the opposition and their supporters should be able to exercise their basic right to take part in conduct of public affairs in the same way as the party that's in power. The committee urges the authorities to take all necessary measures to resolve this issue without delay. Members of the council, our colleagues in Venezuela need us. The committee calls on all parliamentarians in the IPU, permanent observers, parliamentary assemblies, global organizations, and human rights organizations to ensure that measures are taken, concrete measures for an urgent resolution of individual cases that currently have the attention of the committee. There also must be contributions to a sustainable solution for the political crisis in Venezuela while respecting democratic and human rights values. Asia. The committee has started with Mongolia. The case of Mr. Zorij is one of the key cases that has come before the committee. The murder of this deputy was committed over 20 years ago, but it still has not been solved. And it gets worse. Innocent people have been imprisoned after suffering torture in order to justify this crime. We need this file to be resolved, and it must be a priority. The committee hopes that the true people responsible, those who organized and instigated this murder, should be identified and brought to justice. We will not give up on this until we find a solution. Philippines. So, Senator Leyla de Lima is an activist for human rights. She has spent 3.5 years in detention without any proper proof being presented against her. This concerns the committee. The committee is convinced that the proceedings against Senator Lima come from her ferocious opposition to the way that President Duterte has been carrying out the war on drugs. We renew our call for the immediate liberation of this senator, and we call for all charges against her to be dropped. In the meantime, we call on the Philippine Senate to adopt a stronger position in favor of the participation of Senator Lima in its work. In Europe, there's just one case. This is the case of Mr. Victor Gonchar in Belarus. The time has come to talk about another key case that's come before the committee, regarding the Belarusian parliamentarian, Mr. Victor Gonchar. He disappeared on the 16th of September 1999, the night before a parliamentary session during which he was to present information that would compromise Mr. Lukashenko. This person is in power in the country until now. The committee has received credible information in detail showing who may be responsible in the state for this disappearance. The committee regrets that the Parliament of Belarus has refused to take part in a hearing in front of its members, and we call for the authorities to give a credible explanation regarding this case, and it should carry out a credible, independent investigation to work out the truth about what really happened and to end impunity. The committee also calls for the authorities to accept a new mission in the country to bring to light new information received, and we invite all members of the IPU and any relevant organization to put in place concrete measures to ensure that the truth comes out and justice is done for the victims. In the Middle East and North Africa. So it's an ongoing case. It seems to be everlasting, shall we say. Palestine, of course. The committee has examined the case of Mr. Marwan Barghouti and Mr. Ahmad Sadat, two former Palestinian MPs placed in detention after unfair trials. The committee is still concerned about their detention in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic, taking into account information gathered on the conditions of detention for people in Israeli prisons. The committee calls on the Israeli authorities to free them and to provide information on their conditions of detention at the moment. So, finally, there's another case that we have looked at, Egypt. The committee would like to present to you the new case of a former Egyptian MP, Mr. Mustafa Al-Nagar, who is currently disappeared. The committee is concerned by the disappearance of Mr. Al-Nagar, and it seems this is not being investigated. The disappearance of Mr. Al-Nagar is even more concerning, as Mr. Al-Nagar had been condemned to 3 years in prison for having expressed his opinion, and he has not served his sentence for fear of what could happen to him in detention. We call on the authorities in Egypt to take the disappearance of Mr. Al-Nagar in serious and to open an inquiry, making all the efforts necessary to locate this person. So I would like to add that over the past 5 months, the committee has been addressing has been response. We've been, and we didn't have the session we wanted in the 162nd session. So just yesterday, we got a reaction from the Egyptian authorities. They said, so they expressed certain thoughts on this. So in the name of the committee, I would like to reassure the Egyptian delegation, we'll take their contributions into account and put them into the final version of the decision. Mr. President, my colleagues, the health crisis at the moment should not cause us to lose sight of the need for human rights to be respected. This must remain a priority for all of us. Nonetheless, measures have been taken to contain the disastrous effects of COVID-19, and these should not be a pretext for violation of basic rights for parliamentarians and for citizens. In precisely this context of crisis, it is more important than ever that our parliamentary colleagues that have been robbed of their rights should know that they can count on our solidarity. So this council has decided to add this to its agenda in this extraordinary session. This question of the human rights of parliamentarians is a strong indication of the commitment that our dear organization has to democracy and human rights. I hope that you'll be able to adopt our decisions, and I hope that we can count on your valuable support to help our colleagues at risk all around the world. So in name of all the members of the Committee on Human Rights, for parliamentarians, IPU, and those in the Secretariat, I thank you very much for listening. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Given the virtual format of our meeting, we regrettably do not have much time available for an in-depth discussion of these important documents. They have been made available to all members on 31st October, and all members have been invited to submit any possible reservations, observations, and rejections in writing. At last sitting, I also reminded our members of the deadline of the written submissions. I wish to inform our members that we have received one reservation from Egypt and two submissions of additional information, one from Democratic Republic of Congo and the other from Zimbabwe. These will be noted for the record, and if they contain clear opposition with regard to a specific decision, will be marked as a reservation on the first page of that decision, as well as made available on a dedicated web page. I will suggest to proceed to the adoption of these decisions, after which we can hear comments and explanations from delegations. May I take it that a set of decisions presented by the President of the Committee on the Human Rights of Parliamentarians are adopted. I see no objections. The decisions are adopted. Thank you very much. Now I would like to invite delegations wishing to do so to take the floor under this agenda item. Statements by members will be limited to 2 minutes. Now the floor is open. I see a green hand from Israel. Now I wish to give the floor to the member from Israel. The floor is yours, please.
Yes?
Yes, we can hear you. Please.
Hi, everybody. Do you hear me?
Yes, okay.
Yes, we can hear you. We can hear you.
Well, President Pacheco spoke about the horrible terror event last night in Vienna. And together with him, we are mourning the victims and we send a fast recovery to the injured people, those who were injured severely, and the others. Parliamentarians supposed to defend citizens, not themselves, when you deal with terror activities. When a parliament member is becoming a terrorist, like the one that you've mentioned in the committee, Marwan Barghouti from the West Bank, he became a terrorist and sent his people to murder civilians. They murdered 5 people, and he was sentenced to 5 life imprisonment and sent to jail for 5 life imprisonment. He became a mastermind of terror. The minute he was sentenced, he's not anymore a parliament member. He is a terrorist. And as a terrorist in jail, he's not a VIP. He's not a very important person. And he is not even a very important prisoner. He's just a prisoner who was sentenced due to his terror activities. Therefore, I think that if it's needed any international supervision, it should be done by the Red Cross, like it happens in Israel, and not by the IPU. Parliamentarians supposed first to defend civilians and not to defend themselves. So I recommend us all to make sure that when we support a parliamentarian, we don't support a terrorist. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Now I'd like to give the floor to the member of St. Tome.
We have lost the connection, Mr. President. So you can go.
Okay,
you can go.
If that's the case, now I'd like to give the floor to a member from Egypt. Man, the floor is yours, please.
Can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Dr. Elwani, can you hear us? We can hear you. We can hear you.
Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, we can hear you. Please go on.
Ma'am, please, the floor is yours.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for allowing me to take the floor. First of all, yes, it is a very important issue that we are discussing today. And myself as a parliamentarian, I am concerned, but also I know how our system works. The time frame that was offered or that was required for the Egyptian parliament and the Egyptian authorities to answer back to all the questions and queries that were given to us was a very short amount of time. That's the first thing that I would like to clarify. The second thing is that the Egyptian authorities have been positively and cooperatively taking into consideration all the aspects and all the inquiries proposed to us. even though we are undergoing now parliamentary elections, stage one and two, and the repetition for them. So we are under a lot of pressure to go on with our democratic process, as well as provide support to our current and ex-parliamentarians, as you agree. So I think we could officially request, we've seen that this procedure has been so fast, we need to officially request more time so that we can provide or we can investigate further into the matter for our own democracy, not just to answer back to our colleagues here in the IPU. Thank you for giving me the word.
Thank you very much. Now I give the floor to the member from St. Tome to be followed by Speaker of Zimbabwe.
We lost São Tomé again. Mr. President, you may want to go on.
Okay. Thank you very much, Secretary General. I would like to give the floor to Speaker Mudanda from Zimbabwe. Mr. Speaker, the floor is yours.
First of all, I would like to thank the Committee on Human Rights for Parliamentarians in the spirit of transparency, parliamentary democracy, and diplomacy. We have given you a detailed response, but I would like to stress one important issue, and that is the due process of the courts is taking place, and also that the Honorable Mamombe has taken the defense of mental instability so that she cannot stand trial. This has been confirmed by three doctors that she is mentally indisposed. So she is on bail at the moment, and hopefully she will respond positively to the treatment that she is getting so that she'll be able to stand trial and hopefully get a fair verdict. But what I want to point out to the committee is this. The committee should not suggest to Zimbabwe Parliament that we should not respect our constitution, which clearly states that we need to observe and respect the doctrine of separation of powers. To that extent, Parliament cannot interfere with the due process of the courts. Parliament must allow the due process of the courts. Parliament can only interfere where there is a miscarriage of the justice delivery that is so visible and pronounced before the eyes of Parliament. Secondly, we would like to disabuse the position of the committee, which says we should not respect the principle of sub judice. This is a universal principle which clearly states that when a matter is before the courts, you cannot interfere with the due process that is taking place in the courts. Therefore, Zimbabwe Parliament disabuses the position taken by the committee to say that we should not regard the principle of sub judice, which is universally accepted. Otherwise, Parliament will be on the watch out for any unwarranted violation of Honorable Mamombe's and freedoms. And if anything should emerge as a result of the due process of the courts, we shall inform the Committee on Human Rights for Parliamentarians. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Now I would like to give the floor to the member from Palestine, to be followed by the member from Venezuela. Is our friend from Palestine there online?
We lost them.
Okay, if that's the case, now I wish to give the floor to the member from Venezuela.
Gracias.
Thank you. Thank you to the Secretary, the Secretariat and the President, and the President of the Committee. I would just like to express what the Commission, or rather the Committee on the Human Rights of Parliamentarians, has said. We, in Venezuela, would like to ratify the support from Parliament, which we have received in over the last 5 years of the National Parliament. I'd like to remind you, as you all know, that we are the only autonomous entity that exists. The speaker has disappeared, says the interpreter. As I was saying, I apologize, there were connection issues, says the speaker. We are the only autonomous entity in Venezuela. We are experiencing a situation where we have more than 150 parliamentarians being prosecuted and are being unfairly being put in detention due to their opinions. So we are hoping that the IPU will give us the support to our National Assembly. And we also want to say that for a month now, we have been experiencing electoral fraud, which goes against our constitution. And we are supposed to nominate the National Council, but this has not happened. This is in our Magna Carta of our country. We are supposed to have a new National Assembly. So really from our heart, we ratify, we echo what you have said here. As you all know, we have got Juan Guaido, who is leading us, and we are hoping that he will be able to promote equality for all of our citizens. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now I see Palestine, the member of Palestine back. I wish to give floor to the member of Palestine. Are you there?
Connection issues, Mr. President.
Okay, if that's the case, I wish to give the floor. Okay, it's connected, right?
Okay, yeah we have Palestine in line.
Okay, Palestine, the floor is yours.
Everybody, I am very pleased to be on. And I would like to express my congratulations to the president of IPU. And if I may, I would like to say a couple of words on the report. First of all, I would like to thank the president of the Human Rights Committee. And thank you for referring to the situation in Palestine. The head of the Israeli delegation stated something that's not true. I would like to say that Al-Barghouti and many others are in prisons in Israel because they are fighters for freedom, because they are fighters for human rights. These people are not terrorists. They are fighting for the freedom. And Marwan Barghouti is a political activist, and he's a man for peace. And he was elected by the people of Palestine. And it is the people of Palestine who decides who represents the people of Palestine in international fora. And it's not the Israeli colonialist who decides. Mr. Barghouti was elected in the National Parliament of Palestine, and therefore he is a representative of the Palestinian people in and out of Palestine, whether it be in Palestine as occupied or outside in diaspora. And I would like to say that we need to have a delegation from IPU visit the Palestinian prisoners. But the problem is that the government of Israel refused that IPU representatives visit occupied territories and refused that the IPU delegations visit Palestinian prisoners. We are fighting for the freedom of people, for the independence of Palestine, for our rights, and for the rights of any people in the world. Palestine is the only country that is still under occupation and that is still fighting in order to recover its sovereignty on its territory and to recover its freedom. So I would like once again to thank the presenter of the report, and I would like the IPU Human Rights Committee to visit the Palestinian prisoners in the prisons of Israel. Mr. Barghouti is a militant, he's an activist, and he's a man of peace, and he's one of our activists that are fighting for freedom. So once again, thank you for the quality of the report. And Mr. Barghouti is not a terrorist, he is a freedom fighter. It is the Israelis who destroyed olive trees recently. That is a terrorist act. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now I wish to give floor to Dr. Ali from United Arab Emirates. Dr. Ali, the floor is yours. Dr. Ali, are you there?
Connection issues.
Okay, if that's the case, I see the green hand from St. Tommy. Yes, it's connected.
Mr. President, the speaker from Sao Tome has been asking for the floor for a while now, especially during the period when they were presenting congratulatory messages. So I think that his intervention has to do with that particular item. As you have indicated, he is at liberty to submit a written text that will be conveyed to the incoming president, because we have problems connecting with him.
Okay, thank you very much, Secretary General. Is our representative from UAE is being connected? Because in the event chat, Dr. Ali said he requested to speak.
موجود. شكراً سعادة الرئيس.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to express my thanks to the Human Rights Committee and its president for this detailed report. And because of the conditions that are difficult conditions marked by COVID epidemic, I would really commend Egypt for its position. And I would like to commend the Egyptian comment as to demanding clarifications. In fact, I would like to see all countries do the same as Egypt in interacting with the Human Rights Committee. The Human Rights Committee have confidence, and this Human Rights Committee should be able to serve the peoples of the whole world. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Ali, is there any member who wishes to speak? I see none, green hands. So we heard the comments, opinions, reservation expressed, even disagreement expressed from Israel, Egypt, Zimbabwe, Venezuela, Palestine, United Arab Emirates. And I wish to give the floor to Mr. President to respond. Mr. President, the floor is yours, please.
Je vous remercie, Monsieur le Président Chen.
Thank you very much, President Chen. I listened to the various different reactions. I think there are a lot more contributions as opposed to concerns. I must say that I'd like to talk about the case of Mr. Barghouti and El-Sahab and on what the delegation of Israel said. The Human Rights Committee considers in its rules and procedures that all parliamentarians who are thought to have been arrested or imprisoned without following, without their immunity being lifted, without being given a right to a fair trial, constitutes a case that the committee must absolutely examine. And when we, the committee, do not receive responses from the authorities from the country, and when the MP is in detention, then the case is considered as a permanent case that needs to be reviewed at every occasion at our committee. So, the committee would like to address several different correspondences that it carried out with the Israeli authorities. And we ask that you authorize that our committee come and visit one time, just to see the imprisoned MPs, just so that we can see the detention conditions. That is part of our mandate. Israel is a democratic state, a state that defends human rights, and that, from my perspective, is an active member of the Interparliamentary Union. And so should therefore contribute to helping the IPU in achieving its objectives. This is what we expect, and this is what we hope that the Israeli authorities will do, and in allowing another visit from the committee to an Israeli prison so that we can see the detention conditions of the MPs corresponding to the cases that we are examining. For Egypt, we have taken note of their observations, and as I said, we will integrate them. And I hope that this collaboration that started in a very active manner will continue and help the committee make more progress. So thank you for your availability. For Zimbabwe, I have taken note of the observations of the president of the Zimbabwe National Assembly, and we will take these new elements into account when it comes to our analyses, when we examine the files, particularly that of Madame Mamombe. I think these are the cases that I wanted to say a few words on. The rest were contributions and compliments. So to those, I would like to thank Venezuela, United Arab Emirates and Palestine for their words and for their support to the committee. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, for your response. So the comments and the opinions, reservations from the floor will be reflected for the record. We have now come to the end of the deliberations under this agenda item. Let's move on to item 11. Under this item, the Governing Council is invited to review and approve the list of future interparliamentary meetings scheduled from the end of 2020 onwards. Now I give the floor to the Secretary General to provide an overview of the list of the meetings foreseen for the incoming period. Mr. Secretary General, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. The entire membership of the organization has received the list of future meetings that was circulated in mid-October, indicating two categories of meetings that will be taking place. First of all, you have the statutory assemblies of the IPU, and you will note that we had received an offer from the Parliament of Morocco to host the IPU 142nd Assembly in Marrakesh next year in March. We had made all the arrangements, working with the Moroccan authorities to make sure that everything would be okay for that meeting. It had been approved by the governing bodies, but recently I have received from the Moroccan Parliament, the two speakers, a letter stating that in view of the uncertainty surrounding the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, the Moroccan Parliament was not in a position to accommodate that assembly under optimal conditions and has therefore requested that the assembly be postponed. We have therefore had to go back to a plan B that we had identified, that of repatriating that assembly to Geneva. And as you will see in that schedule of meetings that is before you, we have identified a time slot of May, June 2021, which is the period when the conference center in Geneva will be available to host an assembly of the magnitude of the IPU assembly. So we have indicated that tentatively, and we do hope that by then the pandemic will have been behind us so that you can meet physically. Otherwise, we will continue to inform the Executive Committee of Developments, and the necessary decisions will be taken accordingly. You will also remember that the assembly that was scheduled to take place in Kigali, Rwanda, at this particular moment in October 2020, has had to be postponed upon the request of the Rwandan authorities. And now we have rescheduled that assembly for the 6th to the 10th of November 2021. Lastly, Mr. President, under this category of meetings, we have received an offer from the Parliament of Indonesia to host an IPU assembly in April 2022. And we are pursuing discussions with the Indonesian authorities with a view to ascertaining the feasibility of hosting such a meeting. We do not have any doubts that they have the facilities, but we need to ascertain this. So, Mr. President, you and your colleagues may wish to take note of this kind offer from the Parliament of Indonesia. We will pursue discussions with them and look at all the technical and logistical arrangements that are needed so that this can be confirmed, this offer can be confirmed as soon as possible. Then, Mr. President, you have the second category of meetings, which is the specialized meetings that you are familiar with. And again, you will see that we have left open the door to organize many of these events virtually in view of the current pandemic and to take into account the experience that we have garnered during this year of the COVID-19 pandemic and the use of technology to organize events in a cost-effective manner. So we have indicated the list of events that we foresee by the end of this year, then in 2021, and also in 2022, when we have certainty. This list is intended to help you plan. It is to give you an idea of predictability so that you have a clear understanding of what may be expected of you in terms of involvement and participation in the work of the organization. I wish to point out that we have been in discussions with the Austrian authorities with a view to the holding of the second segment of the Women Speakers Summit and the 5th World Conference of Speakers in Vienna. You have approved the holding of this meeting in the budget, and you have, Mr. President, you and your colleagues have proceeded to complete the composition of the PrepCom for these events. And so this has been included in the schedule of meetings. We have tentatively identified the month of July to host the meeting. In this regard, Mr. President, regarding the speakers' conference yesterday, as I said, you approved nominations for the vacancies on the preparatory committee. Since you deliberated on this matter, we have now been informed by the Parliament of Belgium that they are in a position to nominate one of their two female speakers to serve on the on the preparatory committee of the speakers' conference. You may wish to invite your colleagues, Mr. President, to take note of this nomination and then urge those two geopolitical groups that are yet to complete their, quota on the PrepCom to do so. We point out that it is Eurasia, where we are expecting one male speaker, and the Asia-Pacific group, where we are expecting one female speaker. Mr. President, for the rest of the meetings on the schedule there, I believe it's straightforward. We have included in this schedule only meetings for which we do have the resources, either from the core budget or from the voluntary funding. So no unresourced activities have been included in this schedule. I therefore, Mr. President, ask you kindly to urge your colleagues to approve this schedule so that we can introduce an element of predictability in our work with a view to better planning for the holding of these activities. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Secretary General, for your report. Is there any questions and comments? Any member who wants to make comments or suggestions, please put up your green hand. I see none. Thank you for your Secretary General for your information, particularly on the Indonesian Parliament's offer to invite IPU assemblies there in 2022. We take note of this and ask the Secretary General to pursue with the Indonesian authorities on this matter. We also take note of the PRECOM, nomination to the PRECOM since our last meeting. So we take note of the nomination of Madam Speaker from Belgium on behalf of 12 Plus on the PRECOM. Do I take it that the Council takes note of these two? We take note of these two. And now before us, we have the list of the future IPU meetings and activities. Should I take it as the Council approve? So approved. Thank you very much. Now let's move to item 12. Under this agenda item 12, the Governing Council is invited to review the situation in Mali and take a decision on Mali's membership of the IPU. The document CL/20612-1, prepared by the IPU Secretariat, describing the situation in Mali in the context of the dissolution of the National Assembly in the country following the coup of 18th August 2020 has been made available to the Governing Council members. May I invite the Secretary General to provide a brief update to the members of Governing Council on the situation in Mali. Secretary General, the floor is yours.
Thank you again, Mr. President. Thank you for this opportunity to brief you on the situation in Mali. It is on your agenda on account of recent developments in that country since August 2020. The Executive Committee has deliberated on that situation at length during two sessions on the 31st of August and most recently on the 30th of October. And the recent situation or developments in Mali are as follows. Following a period of protracted crisis in the country with popular uprisings, insurgency in the north of the country, terrorist attacks, and all manners of social upheaval, the military stepped in August 2020. They dissolved the institutions, including the National Assembly. They arrested the president of the country as well as the prime minister and put in place a transitional government made up of the military. This situation was roundly condemned by the international community including the Regional Cooperation Organization, ECOWAS, the African Union, and a host of other international organizations. And the new Malian authorities quickly came under pressure from all manners of partners, including sanctions and other restrictions on the margin of manoeuvre for the new authorities. Under this pressure, the new authorities entered into discussions, including broad-based consultations with the various forces of the country, including the regional grouping I mentioned, ECOWAS. And at the end of the day, they came up with a transitional plan for swift return to democracy and constitutional order in Mali. The situation since August and September has improved considerably, with measures being put in place, a new government, including civilians and the military, being put in place, a transitional national council being established, which will serve as the legislative organ during the transitional period, which is now foreseen to last 18 months instead of the 3 years that the new authorities had indicated. There are wide consultations ongoing in the country, and the authorities have been reporting to the regional groupings, ECOWAS and the African Union. They have released the president, the outgoing president. They have released the Speaker of the National Assembly and the Prime Minister, and they are doing their best to restore some order in the country. These developments have been welcomed by ECOWAS, by the African Union, and most recently by the UN Security Council. So they all have welcomed developments and have urged the Malian authorities to work speedily towards a return to normal constitutional rule. As far as the IPU is concerned, Mr. President, you will remember that a strong statement of condemnation was issued by the IPU, expressing its concern over unconstitutional accession to power by the military, which runs counter to the democratic values that the IPU upholds. That statement urged the authorities of Mali to ensure the physical integrity of the political leadership, including the members of parliament. The IPU also offered its assistance in helping the Malian authorities towards a speedy return to constitutional rule. Mr. President, as I said, you and your colleagues examined this situation at length in the Executive Committee, and you are able today, Mr. President, to brief your colleagues on the way forward for Mali. This is based on the positive developments that we have experienced in Mali. Of course, we do not like military coups to happen. These are undemocratic. Of course, we don't want unrest in a country. But we would like to ask you to adopt the consistent approach that the IPU has adopted in such matters, that you do not systematically suspend a country on account of what has happened, but monitor developments and nudge the authorities towards speedy recovery, speedy return to constitutional rule. That is the recommendation that we are making, and it is based on recent experience in Thailand, in Burkina Faso, in Egypt, Algeria, Sudan, and many others where the IPU has refrained from suspending the country concerned and has worked in many cases with Egypt, Tunisia, Thailand to help them build a new legislative framework for a new country and new system of governance. We are urging a similar approach to Mali, especially so as the Secretary General has been in touch with the new authorities, and they have sent two formal requests, one through the ambassador in Geneva and one through the foreign minister, asking the IPU to be understanding of the situation that is happening in Mali, asking the IPU to provide support to the Transitional National Council with a view to putting in place a strong framework for a new system of governance in Mali. So we do encourage you, Mr. President, you and your colleagues, to adopt this consistent line of taking note of what has happened, expressing your deep concern about recent developments, but also offering the IPU's readiness to work with the authorities at their request with a view to speedy return to constitutional rule. You may want, Mr. President, to make sure that the Malian authorities are under notice that the IPU is monitoring the situation very closely and will be reviewing it regularly with a view to deciding on the next course of action. You may wish to ask your colleagues, Mr. President, as in past situations, to charge the Secretary General with pursuing contacts with the new authorities in order to agree on a roadmap that will help the IPU support the Parliament towards return to constitutional rule. So that is a brief on what has happened in Mali and our recommendation to the governing bodies of the IPU. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Secretary General, for your update on the situation in Mali. Just as you said, at its meetings on August 31st and 30th October 2020, the Executive Committee discussed the situation in Mali, considering the IPU practice to accompany its members during the transitional period to restoration of the constitutional order, and in light of the current international and regional trend, was in favor of taking note of the current developments and encouraging the new Malian authorities to work speedily to the conclusion of the transitional process and the return to full constitutional civilian order. The Executive Committee therefore recommended to maintain Mali's membership and encourage the IPU to work with the authorities toward a speedy return to normal constitutional rule as soon as possible. The Executive Committee entrusted the Secretary General with a mandate to implement this recommendation and to report to the governing bodies on a regular basis in line with a roadmap to be agreed with the transitional authorities of Mali. Before I open the floor to the governing council members wishing to submit comments under this agenda, verbally or in writing, I wish to note that such comments will be included and will be reflected as an integral part of the official records of this session. Now the floor is open for any questions and comments. Is there any member who requests the floor? I see the two green hands. Now I would like to give floor to Speaker Shanim from Algeria, to be followed by Representative Member from Djibouti. Speaker Shanim, the floor is yours.
أهلاً وسهلاً. شكراً سيد شان. أشكرك في البداية على إدارتك لجلسات المجلس الحاكم في دورة 260. وبودي كذلك أن أتوجه بالتهاني للسيد.
Thank you, Mr. President, for running this session. And I would also like to congratulate Mr. Pacheco for his new election to the presidency of the IPU. And we would like to express also our full support to his efforts, and we would like to thank the Mr. General Secretary and all the members of the IPU. Of course, about the constitution that the Algerian people decided to adopt, a new constitution that gives wider competencies in following up and observing the new government. I think this constitution is considered as a qualitative step towards democracy. This matter is very important. We have 1,400 kilometer frontiers with Mali. We have wide and very deep social relationships with Mali. We know the situation is very critical and serious. And unfortunately, because of the presence of terrorist groups of several kinds, especially in the desert area, we are afraid that that would be another opportunity for terrorist groups to be more present in the region. That's why we have to be very careful while dealing with the Malian issues and situation. And especially that there was a decision made to establish new sovereign committees. All the regional organizations that such as the African Union actually approved this decision and expressed the necessity of accompanying Mali in establishing these bodies and entities, and also expressed that the solution must rise from Mali with the support of the international community. There are several international agreements about dealing with terrorism and how to what measures shall be taken in this situation. But we cannot ignore that this situation is actually relates to Mali, to its sovereignty. That's why we should respect the sovereignty of this country and its institutional capacities, because otherwise that would affect negatively the process of democracy. Maybe some errors in fighting or in dealing with terrorism might not bring the wanted results and might even complicate the situation even more. We still think in Algeria that the peace agreement adopted by several Malian parties in 2015 with Algeria is still a solution. There is a round of dialogue with many stakeholders and parties that consider that we do have political solutions. It's true that there are some changes in the statu quo, but there are some factors and elements that can guarantee the success of this initiative. We think in Algeria that we internally have to participate, and as I said, our continuity is threatened by the non-establishment of a national central state in Mali. That's why I support the approach presented by Mr. Secretary General, and it's very important to support that the IPU supports the new government approved by the last conference, as he mentioned, and we approve all the steps and efforts Mali would take in order to make this process successful, because it's this approach is for development. The people of the region need help to achieve this development. They need solidarity, especially under the circumstances of the new epidemic. So, we have to take into consideration many issues in Mali, and I think Algeria spends a great effort in this context. And we also worked on many recommendations and suggestions that would help our brothers and sisters in Mali to get out of this crisis and go back to a constitutional solution through internal dialogue and through elements of a constitutional solution that is based on respecting all the components of the Malian people and the non-exclusion of any of its elements or constituents. And also, we do not have any interference in the future of Mali in order to achieve stability, peace, security, and democracy proned by the IPU. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. Secretary General, and thank you all the colleagues in this session. This session is really, really reflects that the IPU is very keen on democratic practices and on sharing the points of view. I also congratulate and greet the reports that were issued on this last session. And of course, I emphasize of the importance of dialogue and cooperation to find joint solutions. And in order to achieve our results and include all the stakeholders. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. Secretary General.
Thank you very much, Speaker. I would like to give floor to a member from Djibouti. Djibouti, you have the floor.
I hope you can see me. Can you hear me now? The speaker asks.
Please activate your camera, please.
Oui.
Monsieur le Président.
So please, we can hear you. We can't see you at the moment. Could you put your camera on, please? Please turn on your video, okay? Okay, can you hear me now? We can hear you. We can't actually see you. But go ahead. Go ahead in any case. We can certainly hear you. The camera. So if you can hear me, I'll go ahead. So, Mr. President, Mr. Secretary General, dear colleagues, the situation in Mali at the moment should not call into question their affiliation to our union. They've made progress, so, and that's been significant, so we should respect that. They're moving towards constitutional normality. There are conditions from ECOWAS. They've almost all been satisfied. So a civil president has been named to direct the transition, the nomination of a civilian prime minister, the adoption of a charter of transition with a precise calendar to normal constitutionalism, setting up a national body for transition instead of the National Assembly, and effective implementation is currently being negotiated amongst the different parties. Furthermore, the transition authorities have adopted actions moving in the right direction, notably freeing Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta to receive care, freeing of the PM and all politicians who've been arrested, freeing of Saïd Lacissé, who's been held out. So Ismaïl Cissé had been kidnapped for 6 months. So he's been liberated. So the current authorities have been working correctly to free Ismaïl Cissé. So these are good conditions. We see good faith by the transition authorities for. So this has enabled ending of sanctions against them. So the IPU has various precedents on the issue. I've said in another meeting that we should continue with the affiliation of Mali. It's a strong sign from our organization to encourage the people of Mali in their resilience in this multiple challenge, security, the economy, health situation and the political situation that they're currently dealing with. So that's what I would like to say on the ongoing membership of Mali. So as speaking as president of the IPU in Africa, also a member of the IPU. So sorry for the problems with the camera. I'm on the road in the region. In the north of Djibouti. I've gone from my home village, Luanda, in the region of Djoula. So I'm so happy to be participating in this virtual conference. Thank you so much. Congratulations. I should also not forget to pass those on.
Thank you very much. Is there any member who wants to take the floor? I see no green hands. We heard the comments from Speaker Janine from Algeria and a member from Djibouti. I also noticed the comments made by Trinidad and Tobago, Honorable Anisette George, in the event chat. We take note of them. May I take it the Council approve the Executive Committee's recommendations? So approved. Thank you very much. Let's move to the last item on the agenda. Any other business? My colleagues, is there any member who wants to take the floor under this item? I see none. Before I proceed to my closing remarks, I wish to give the floor to Mr. President Pacheco. I'm just wondering, Mr. President, do you have anything you deem necessary to share with us before I close this session? Mr. President.
Então.
Okay, Secretary General, is our president online?
He's online, but we're trying to connect him. Mr. President, can you raise your green hand again? Okay, very good. Yeah. He's raised his green hand again. Come, let's allow him into.
Yeah, I noticed in the event chat, Mr. President said yes.
Yes.
To take the floor. Mr. President, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chen, Mr. Secretary General. In fin, we are near the end of our meeting, and so just a few words to say thank you for you, both of you. You did a great job. Your collaboration was essential to the success of this meeting, and I know that it was not easy because it is not a traditional meeting. And to have more than 100 delegations participating online, voting, using the floor, wishing to make presentations and so on, it is not easy. It's everything is new, and we are learning a little bit also, all of us, in this process. So the first word is to say thank you. The second word is to say that Mr. Chen, especially, and Mr. Secretary General, we will work together very soon and very hard. Because in politics, as we know, the first date of the mandate is near the is one day near the end, and so we are here not to just to be president. I am not here just to be president of IPU. I am here to work, and I need your collaboration. It's impossible, and this task is not a task for a man or for a woman. This is a team task. That's why I think that it's important that all of us should be available to work together to have a stronger IPU. With more visibility, working, try to find solutions to so many problems that we have in our planet, in these pandemic times and after it, because as soon as possible, we hope to have presential meetings because it is essential. We know that these meetings are important because it's impossible to stop our work, but it's not the same thing. We know that the parliamentarian diplomacy is for parliamentary diplomacy, the networking that we may build after the meetings, when we are lunching, when we are in your hotel, just talk a little bit about ourselves, about our countries, how it is important, because the personal relations will be strong. And this way, it will be more easier to sometimes to find solutions when we wish to find that. I always remember. I remember when I read the memories of Mrs. Thatcher, and she told once in her book of memories that sometimes at number 10 of the Downing Street, she has a small kitchen. And sometimes with foreign prime ministers and presidents, when there is a difficult issue to solve, she is saying, I'm a little bit angry. May you help me to get some food for us? And they are going to the kitchen, they began to cook, and after it, the relation, the cold the ice that is present in the beginning of the meeting will disappear and the solutions will appear. That's why presidential meetings are so important. We hope as soon as possible we came back to that. Thank you so much, Mr. Chen. Thank you so much, Martin. And thank you so much to all your staff and dear colleagues. Stronger will be much better because this way we will solve some problems, at least some problems of our world. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Mr. Secretary General, I guess we don't have any housekeeping matters, but I want to give you floor to leave with some of your remarks. The floor is yours.
No, Mr. President, yes, we don't have any housekeeping matters apart from the fact that you are going to declare that our deliberations are over today and that they will not have the session that was foreseen tomorrow, thanks to Duarte winning so handsomely during the first round, and so we don't have to go on to the last day of the council. We have been very pleased, my colleagues and I have been very pleased to be of assistance to our members to do their statutory duty of taking decisions pertaining to the governance of the organization. As you have pointed out, incoming president and acting president, it has not been easy. We have spent sleepless nights trying to put everything in place to guarantee as smooth a session as possible. You have seen me regularly on this screen, permanently on this screen, but I'm not the one who has done this job. It is my colleagues in the secretariat who have been spending those sleepless nights. I have simply been the public image of that commitment by the secretariat. In this studio where I am speaking from, I have many colleagues in different capacities. I have Ambassador Philip, who is just sitting next to me, Akio. I see my colleagues working the computers, Alessandra, Graziella, and others in their offices working to make sure that this session unfolds very smoothly. And we are going to heave a sigh of relief when you declare this meeting closed, because we think that we have been able to do our level best to deliver to you as our members. And that is what we consider to be our role, to support your political vision, to support the organization uphold its values. And today you are closing a session whereby you have taken historic decisions. You have come out clearly on what it is you have in terms of the vision for the organization, Mr. President, newly elected president, and you have heard from members what they think we should be focusing on in the coming years, especially in the context of the exceptional circumstances that we are witnessing today. So I wish to thank you all for your support. Mr. Acting President, I have not called you Acting President, but now I can do that because we have a new president. So, Mr. Acting President, thank you for your constant consultations with us in the Secretariat to make sure everything was in place for this meeting. I want to record my thanks to my colleagues who have put this together and made sure that everything comes up nicely. And you, Mr. President, we are there out to order. That's what they say, right? we're there. We're at your service, and we're going to work together. And the job starts immediately, right? Thank you very much to you all and to the members who are out there who have been contributing to the deliberations. We see that there's been active participation. We have lots of people online still, in spite of us getting to situation of anticlimax after the election of the new president, which shows their commitment to the organization. Thank you all, and we will continue. A lucha continua.
Thank you very much, Secretary General. Mr. President, Secretary General, my colleagues, we now come to the end of what has been a historical and a truly memorable event. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to preside over this 206th session of the IPU Governing Council, the first ever in virtual format. Despite many challenges, technological time differences, with some colleagues connecting in the very early morning and others working until midnight and beyond, we have been able to meet for three very busy days and to take important decisions regarding the functioning and the governance of the IPU. I have been impressed by the high level of participation in our Governing Council session from 145 member parliaments, registering 410 Governing Council members. The level of participation in the remote elections for the new IPU president, 97% of the registered Governing Council members. It is indeed historical and truly remarkable. This is a testimony to the interest and the commitment of our members to the important mission and the work of our organization. I therefore wish to thank all council members for your active participation and contributions. Thank you very much. We have elected Ms. Giuliette Pacheco, the 30th president of Interparliamentary Union. He has taken the baton from our honorary president, Gabriela Cuevas Barón. He will bring new energy and fresh ideas as we continue to face the many challenges of our ever-changing world. Let's wish him well in his endeavors to move the IPU forward. We will be with you, Mr. President. We have adopted the consolidated budget. It is a strong budget, not easy come at all. And I'm grateful to all our IPU members for your contributions. What we need now is more parliamentary diplomacy, more multilateralism, more engagement from all our members. We should remember this organization is a people's house, which concentrates on people's needs with a people-centered, cost-effective, and the results-oriented approach to make sure whatever we do is to deliver tangible results and benefits to the people we represent. The organization and arrangements of this virtual session are wonderfully done. I know how much work involved, how many sleepless nights endured, all put together to finish its mission. This is a committed, dedicated, hard-working team, our secretariat, with the level highest professionalism under the leadership and the guidance of our brilliant Secretary General. May I, on behalf of the Governing Council and in my own name, Secretary General and the Secretariat, thank you very much. I'd also to thank the interpreters in the booth. Without them, we might have lost somewhere. Your work is worthy. Thank you very much. Mr. President, Secretary General, colleagues, to fight the virus and win the battle, the IPU is ever more relevant, and it is people's call for the parliamentary leadership. We should put people and their life first. We should mobilize all resources to make a science-based solutions and a targeted response. No case should be missed. No patient should be left untreated. We should enhance solidarity, deepen cooperation, and get this through together. The battle must be won. The battle will be won. To maintain the lasting peace and promote common development, the IPU is ever more relevant, and it is people's call for the parliamentary leadership. The history of development of human society is a history of our struggles against all challenges and difficulties, and our victories over them. We are battling the COVID-19 pandemic, though peace and development remain the underlying trend of our times. The people everywhere crave even more strongly for peace, development, and a win-win cooperation. COVID-19 will not be the last crisis to confront humanity, so we must join hands and be prepared. Stay together, we are strong. Stay apart, we are weak. Behind us are the people we represent. We are living in an interconnected global village with a common stake. We are equal members of big family. The IPU is ever more relevant, and it is people's call for the parliamentary leadership. All countries are closely connected, and we share a common future. No country can gain from others' difficulties or maintain stability by taking advantage of others' troubles. The world is diverse in nature, and we should turn this diversity into a constant source of inspiration, driving human advancement that ensures better life for the people we represent. The world will never return to isolation, and no one can sever the ties between countries. The IPU is ever more relevant, and it is people's call for the parliamentary leadership. We should not dodge the challenges of economic globalization. Instead, we must face up to major issues such as a wealth gap and development divide. We should strike a proper balance between the government and the market, fairness and efficiency, growth and income distribution, technology and employment, so as to ensure full and balanced development that delivers tangible benefits to the people we represent. Humankind should launch a green revolution and move faster to create a green way of development and life. The IPU is ever more relevant and is people's call for the parliamentary leadership. All countries must take decisive steps to honor in concert the Paris Agreement to charter the course for the world to transition to green and low carbon development so as to protect our shared homeland. We must make the right choice, a choice worthy of the people's trust and of our times. Together, we can make the world a better place for the people we represent. With these words, now I declare the 206th session of the Governing Council closed. Until next session, please stay safe, stay healthy, stay strong. Goodbye. Goodbye from Beijing.